What up? Alex here with Ryan.
Hey, I actually get to do one of these.
Yeah, this is just a little preamble. Basically, listener caution is advised. This is just a particularly... A gentle stroll of an episode. I mean, more than usual.
Yeah.
Like, before the blog posts, which have been quite sort of structured chats about each thing, we'd sort of kind of... We've always preferred a sort of more of a free-form chat. And my God, have we gone back to our roots? This is just...
Yeah, this episode is mainly about just chatting through our time from Freedom Free. And we talk about it later on in the episode, but I think accurately described is a bit of a clip show.
Yeah. We sort of just keep getting pulled off on tangents and stuff. To the point that we thought this was necessary.
Yeah, this is a very, very casual chat.
Yeah, so if you're... I know that we're not to everyone's taste, but some people stomach us either whether they just want more Gilmore content or whether they like sometimes when we go down a bit more of a sort of analytical path. This definitely isn't that. This is just a chat.
Yeah, they're merely chatting about just what we've enjoyed about Freedom Free and just talking about experience we've had while we've been playing the game. So if you're here to listen to really, you know, strategy or opinions on cards, or this one isn't for you and we will not hold it against you pulling the parachute cord hard and quick on this one. But if you're interested in listening to our kind of general rambling about kind of how we basically fell in love with Guild Ball, then listen on and thank you for tuning in.
We sort of did this as a sort of season 3 wrap up because we then roll into... I spoke to Bryce about season 4 and the sort of development process of like the core rules before realising just how bad an idea it was, because we can't talk about things because it's not all out yet.
Yeah.
So instead of sort of realising and doing the right thing and start talking about something else, I sort of... The captain went down with the ship and Bryce is... My God, he's a patient man. But yeah, it's...
Yeah, so this episode is less of a fanfare for Freedom Free, more of a very gentle wave and a very slow paced jog next to the train if it goes away.
But then we speak to Bryce about season 4, which, Colin, we've managed to go off piste when we were trying to talk about how we were going off piste.
Yeah, bring it back. We hope you enjoy this one. But if you're not looking for a casual chat and you want more kind of hardcore Guild Ball content, feel free to give this one a bit of a pass, because next week we're coming in with Season 4 hard. We hope to see you then. Welcome to episode 23 anyway, guys. Yeah, Kingdom 4, not here yet. Not officially anyway.
Almost here.
Yeah, almost. But I think we're new. We've got to say goodbye to the old.
That's it. We're on the ship. We're looking forward. We can see old-timey people waving to the ship as it comes in.
Ooh, inexplicably in black and white.
Yeah.
And
we're looking behind us at the salty, briny seas of season 3. Looking forward to the warm docks of season 4. And we think back and we reminisce on the journey that has taken us this far.
Yeah. Well, the thing me and you is we actually only came on the game and thinking free route.
Yeah.
Like thinking 2 had come and gone by the time we showed up.
Yeah. As had season 1.
Yeah. Yeah, that's usually how chronology works. Yeah. I was 29 once and I'm never going to be 29 again. I've been cheated. Oh, well. But, me and Alex, we came up with Kingdom 3, and, I don't know, we're not just saying goodbye to Kingdom 3 in any way. We're saying goodbye to, basically, the only version of the game we've, basically, ever known up until this point.
Mm.
And I've said before that Kingdom 3 sat in a very balanced place.
Yeah.
Not ridiculously balanced.
No, I think it's... It's probably the cleanest rule set I've ever played.
Yeah.
Which is something that... later on in the episode, we've got an interview with Bryce that I completely ballsed up, so look forward to that. And one of the things Bryce said there was, you know, season 3 was a really clean, tight rule set, you know, and I think he was completely right. It's the tightest rule set I've ever played, at least.
Well, yeah, it don't suffer from a lot of problems a lot of games have. I mean, there's going to be a lot of new stuff pouring in now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard to keep on top of it all. Actually, ignoring, if you come into the Guild Ball naked right now, you've already got all your guilds, and even the, just with the minor guilds that are out, and then the veterans, there's an army of rookies coming up.
Mm.
I don't know what's going to happen after the minor guilds. I'm hoping there's going to be a lull period. But we got into the game at a point...
My current theory is that each minor guild, there'll be some sort... I think there's going to be some sort of narrative thing, and minor guilds are going to become major guilds, and a second 6 will come out for each one. But I think we're looking a couple of years for that.
Yeah.
So I think that when the last like sort of minor guild box as we know it of 6 models comes out, there'll be a lull period, and then the next release I think, will be the second rat catcher's box. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that makes total sense to me, like. Yeah. But regardless, the number of models coming out increased exponentially. Like, when we first started playing Season 3, the hunters were considered a relatively new guild.
Mm.
Blacksmiths went out, the farmers were just about to come out, and there weren't that many, you know, guilds overall. A shitload of models, a shitload to learn.
Mm.
But, yeah, we came on Season 3 just in time for actual new guilds to start showing up. And, when we kind of started the game, my initial Season 3 choice was Engineer, and I didn't particularly think about it all too much.
You don't really play them outside of friendly games?
Nah, I'd never play them in a tournament. I'd never play them in a tournament game. My Hunters are my best team, by far.
Yeah.
And look, they're my main guild. And I won't lie, half the reason I play them is because I feel like I'm better with them than my other team.
Yeah.
But... yeah,
I think that's because the engineers are quite ball based and you don't really know what to do when you've got the ball.
Yeah, ball. I don't know. I think
I think the ball is a tool to get from 4 kills to a win. Get 4 kills, then you close the game out.
Yeah, I know. Like, when I do play the engineer, I don't mind going for super gory game. Like, but that single mindedness that comes from scoring goals that I can never want to the engineer. Like, the thing of
that's the exact thing I love about it. The idea there's one objective. Any time I've got one objective, it's either get the ball back or score.
Yeah. I kind of think where I'm at with the engineer. There's something with when you give velocity to the ball. Anyway, charge. Hope you get a double dodge. I did. Yeah, momentum, acrobatic. Why not? Go for the tap in. Bing bang bosh.
Yeah.
And you go done. It's not like there's very rare situations where that isn't usually the correct answer. You know what I mean? Like. There's no like multiple ways to get to the same conclusion. There's usually a very clearly defined path, like for your strikers. Except for like maybe a couple of I'd even say like Season Brisket or Black Hat, you know, people who play around with the ball a bit more.
Mm.
But the answer is usually the same. Pass, I'm open, run.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't mind that in a huge deal if you like that, if that's a game you like playing, but not for me. I love that. I don't know how to put it. I love the optimum activation. I think I feel a way to put it. Like
the bucket of dice. Cena.
Yeah, but not even just Cena. You know, having JCAR go in and just mow people down, having like 5 crowd out, or Chaka just knocks you off at pitch for no. I love that. One of my favourite things about the game. And and when it push comes to shove, when Cena walks in, and you're just like, oh my god, I've waited for this. Oh my god, I've blown singled out. Oh, he's dead. I'm knocked down already.
Yeah.
4 crowd out.
Yeah.
Like you're already team 2-0 defense.
here comes the money.
I love that thing of just going like it's all paid off now. Here's my giving that a big shake, struggling to pick up all your dice. I love that. And more importantly, I love the main thing I like about Guild Ball. I hope it doesn't change that much even forward. I love giving the opponent puzzle more than breaking through a tough opponent. I think I enjoy being difficult to play against.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, engineers can do that. But just not in the way that I think works for me.
Yeah.
But there were so many teams, actually. Season 3 teams, I was on the verge of playing, that would pop off for Season 4. That, yeah, it makes it hard to give... I can't go down the roster and give, like, the goodbye to everyone, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So you came in, you picked up the engineers.
Yeah.
And then from there, you went straight into Hunters, didn't you?
Pretty much. I bought the mystery box.
Mm. What was it? What was in your mystery box?
Well, it was a mystery to me, but it wasn't a mystery to everyone. In fact, it stopped being a mystery to a lot of people. To be fair, for me, who'd never got into the game, the mystery box was an absolute fucking bargain.
Mm.
However, I got the Masons.
Yeah.
And I got like the original run of Masons.
Didn't you get the Brewers?
No, I really wanted the Brewers.
Yeah.
I wanted the Brewers and Metal.
Yeah.
I have like another. I've got Brewers and Kickoff.
Yeah.
And Masons and Kickoff. And I've not played them either of them. Kind of like, I really like the Metal models. Masons. Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, Masons. Awesome. But they're the old Sculpts.
Yeah.
So they're like 50 mil.
Yeah. So they're like running around like 4 foot tall.
Yeah, I remember when I put, I got the original Rage, like I bought the Union box set, or Black Heart box set, and Rage is like a foot shorter. Because it just feels like he's got super little man syndrome.
Yeah. That's why he's just absolutely raging unit. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's Rage. What are you doing? Check it. I'm here now.
Yeah. Runs in, sort of step ladder, and then he fucking goes for you.
Oh, what am I doing, Berserk? Oh, you're bleeding now. You're bleeding. No, but there's so many games, like, so many teams I've played with that I've really fucking enjoyed three.
Yeah.
And it's a shame I didn't put more on the board when I could. But like, yeah, if I can't get a fair few games in, I'm really not going to bother.
Mm.
But yeah, like, after the engineer, I kind of settled down with the homeless after that. But I'm trying to think, like, I don't, who was the first person I played again?
Well, it'd have been me or Jim.
Yeah, I get a feeling it was Jim.
Yeah.
And he actually fucking clued my cock with the Butchers.
Yeah, yeah, I met Jim, got into it was about the same time as we did. Played the Butchers, and then he went to one event and he was getting outkilled by the majority of people, and he was like, oh.
To be fair, the set of dice he was rolling with, I had that moment where I went to Jim and went, oh, are you using your Butchers? And I'm like, oh no, fuck that game.
Yeah.
And I go, oh well, do you mind if I play with your team? And I went, yeah, no, go on. And I had all these dice and shit that came with it.
Yeah.
And his dice are flat out fucking curved.
Yeah.
Straight up. You know, you have that thing, don't you, where people turn around and go, oh my god, I'm rolling like shit every day, every time I roll. I'm going, you kind of go in your head, don't you? Every game?
Yeah.
But I had one game and I went, these dice are fucking curved.
Yeah, yeah.
You're kidding me? If you've got more than 3-0 defence, you need dice out fucking touching.
There were like some ivory coloured.
Yeah, they're kind of like bone dice, and then you have like the butcher's like marbled meat dice.
Yeah, so like the butcher's dice seem to be fine. It's these bone coloured ones that you got that are just fucking. You roll 20 of them and you get 11 ones.
Well, yeah, flat out, like I've never seen it like it.
Yeah, like straight up, I think they're, whether intentionally or not, I think they're weighted.
I think
to be low rollers.
Well, you had the same problem when you first started. You had cursed dice syndrome from the gym. Like it's a bit of a meme at this point that you're just a terrible roller for whatever reason.
Well, whenever we play tabletop RPGs, it's the look on people's face when I'm like, as the barbarian, I will go nuts and I've just killed one of our guys.
We're just missing everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't detected the tone yet, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be quite a casual one. But
we're saying goodbye to season 3, an old friend.
Well, yeah,
and we're speaking amongst our new friends.
I think, am I kidding? I know I'm in a good mood.
No. So Ryan is in a good mood. Right, and this is it. This is going to be, you've got 30 seconds to talk about them, starting from now.
Right, I took the Brewer into the Navigator, yeah. First turn, right, we're going to have to talk about it sooner or later. We'll have to do it in the next episode. The point is, I went in, got my kill, he missed a goal, which is bullshit, because if he hadn't missed that goal, he would have flat out won, foot Navigator. But then I managed to get the 4 kills, bang, goal back, win the game, shaboom.
Wow, you got 10 seconds left.
Shit, 10 seconds. Yeah, fuck the navigating. Ignore the end of the last episode. They're not balanced. Fuck that. Editing trick. Not like slow motion.
Done. Stop talking. There you go. That's it. And I promise there will be no more mention. We should do that more often, you know. give
that. You know, I think we should do that with me in general, to be honest. I already said we need a check clock.
30-second death clock. Yeah.
You were like, going, Ryan, you've used your 45 minutes. Well, Alex, you've got 20 minutes left. I guess I'm just talking for 20 minutes.
Alex, somehow you've got 47 minutes left.
Yeah. I'm just rattling on, like, beeping in background with the clock, going, what's that fucking sound? Turn it off, Alex. I'm talking.
So there we go. That's why you're in a good mood.
Yeah, better mood, anyway. Yeah.
And I'm in a good mood because I've got to play a game, so...
But okay, initially when we first started playing, it was weird because it's not like I went straight to Hunter. I had a fair few games with my engineer, and I had a really, like, again, it's when me and you started taking the game, not more carefully, but played more often.
Mm. There was definitely sort of chapters, wasn't there? There was when we started playing more regularly, and then we started playing more seriously. I think they're the dividers. Yeah.
Can't remember, like, when you were on Fish, that was when...
The first time around.
Yeah, but... I think that was a big part when, before Avarice and Greed were running the fucking...
Yeah, yeah.
You had the Avarice and Greed set up for a while.
Yeah.
Jim told me about
that. Yeah.
They weren't going, oh, it's fucking ridiculous. Like, putting down, like fucking 80-inch goal for it. And by the time we really started playing properly, that had kind of been patched.
Yeah,
so, it wasn't too early.
So I never really got to abuse it.
Yeah. Couldn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
But when we first started playing, I could not get a W under my belt at all.
Mm.
I could not crack Jim Butcher, even with his terrible dice.
Mm.
And half of it, I had that. Fuck my part. Like, I've gone over my initial games with Jim and you.
Yeah.
At what point do you start? Like, I feel like I try and keep it in the first five game territory.
Yeah.
So what were your first five games season 3?
So I picked up at the very very start of season 3. Like I. I had one demo game that was, oh man, I can't remember. I think it was the Season 3 rule set before Season 3 dropped. Mm. Or, like, in this sort of period where we're now, we know what the Season 4 rules are going to be. You know, we know what all the core rule changes are going to be, but it was played with the Season 2 cards. But then again, no, I think that's wrong. I think I got into the game before I started playing it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, we were at the tabletop club that we go to. Well, we don't go there anymore. We were at a tabletop club that we used to go to quite regularly. And just rummaging around in the back room trying to find something, I found this, like, custom board that someone had made out of a wallpaper table. Like this whole 3D sort of thing. Yeah. And I was like, what's this for?
I can't unthink that you found Jumanji. Look, the peakings were gorgeous. Yeah. Like, it had a little centre peak.
But yeah, I found that, got it on the, like, so I asked the guy at the club about it, and he was like, oh yeah, it's Gilball. And I was like, cool, what's that? And he was like, kind of like football. I was like, oh, American football. And he went, no, football. I was like, oh. And I just started to get back into tabletop, like into miniatures over board games. And I was like, I'm just a bit bored of the two armies killing each other.
Yeah.
So the idea that it was more sports-based, there was another objective, I got really interested. And then I just started inhaling content. Like, I think I watched every single match report that was available on YouTube at that time. I think I listened to every podcast that was around. Bought tickets to SteamCon, having never played the game. Then went and bought Kickoff, literally unwrapped it and started playing a game, probably completely wrong. There was a few people watching, no one said anything. Then, like, came home and then started playing the Masons. I think I got like two or three games in, you know, because me getting back into it sort of reinvigorated it at that club for a bit. You know, got two or three games in, then it sort of petered out again quite quickly. And then quite quickly after that, they had a Black Friday sale. So I went all in on like a Fishman's team, because they had a really good price on them, and I preferred the footballing part of the game, as I still do. And then just played Fish, really. Played it into Jim's Butchers. I couldn't. I was really did not understand the 2-inch melee thing, so I would go in base to base every single time, you know, instead of abusing like the 2-inch melee. So he won every single game until I realised. Went to a tournament really quickly, like really quite quickly after I'd got them, and didn't know what I was doing, like bombed out, but had a great time. It was Spuddy, the tournament organiser for the tournaments at Leodis Games now. He's building up a bit of a scene there as well, actually. But yeah, went straight into that tournament, and that's when I started like realising, oh, this is probably the best way for me to play, because this is how I get the most games. Yeah. In the least amount of time, you know. And I think that's the point I'll probably start taking it a bit more seriously, before you even start playing properly, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even now, I take most of my game casually.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who shows up going, oh, I'll play Lord of the Rings, and I've got all my orcs in a carrier bag.
Yeah.
Let me just get my Witch King out. You glued it together. Nah, it'll hold. Falling off.
It held until you threw it down the stairs.
Yeah. Oop, yeah, it's just the kind of player I am. Mm. But I literally had that moment when we were playing Kick. Okay, you were killing me, Jim were killing me. Like, you were scoring the shit out of me, Jim were murdering the fuck out of me. And I knew the thing that kind of turned it for me, which was going, man, I was looking at Ratchet and going like, oh man, you know what? If you put like tooled up, like copy Black Earth, or Hoyt, you could like throw like Black Earth like 10 inch away, and there'd pretty much be no, they wouldn't even be able to reach you.
Yeah.
Like, and you go, man, that's fucked up. Like, that's a bit much, innit? And then I had that thing in my head, and I'm going, wait a minute, that is just how the game is played.
Yeah.
Like, again, going back to fighting game, the thing at the moment I had, but when I was playing Guild Ball before, I had that thing of honour rule.
Yeah.
Where I was like going, okay, I get all this influence. Surely everyone's meant to have a little bit. I'm meant to actually use my playbook, whether it makes sense or not. Go walking Ratchet into melee and going, right, I'm going to play. Off one moment of damage, or two, I do 3 damage and he heals it immediately and kills me back like 9 damage.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, oh, well, you know, I guess it's the way they get the cookie crumbled. I'm supposed to go in, I'm just going to bombard the shit out of you and run away.
Yeah.
Or use my obviously superior kicking to just fuck off and have a guy run off for the wall where you can't reach him and do anything about it. I had that thing of, it's almost like the guy who plays against a player who just throws fireballs at them all the time, going, what the fuck? I thought you played Street Fighter. No, actually, it is.
Yeah.
Fucking loser. And yeah, the cricket, I had that kind of epiphany, and almost immediately I started beating you and Jim.
Yeah.
And I got like, fuck, man. And then that's where kind of my addiction came to Guild Ball, from looking at all the cards and trying to figure out little OP cards.
Yeah.
And when I actually got into it more, when I actually started interacting in the community, the thing that really, really got me into it was looking on the forum, looking at community, and then going, you know what, X model is absolutely shit. I'm going, I like you talking about today.
Yeah.
How can I go in? I don't know. I like, the second I went down that rabbit hole in Kingdom 3, of going, I think I'd do the same in fighting games. And that was another thing that really got me into Guild Ball. I know we talk about it a lot on here, but it is a huge reason. The one of the main things that really I liked about Guild Ball is the miniature, our actual characters.
Yeah.
And the way I compare it in Street Fighter is that their playbook is like their normal move.
Yeah.
Because Street Fighter, like light punch, medium punch, heavy punch, are the same for everyone. The buttons are the same, but the properties of the move are completely different for every character. So their playbook is like their normal move, and their, you know, character plays are like their special moves, and some share properties, but for the most part they've all got like unique moves. And I immediately made a one-for-one connection there, and it made me identify with it on like a competitive and rule level almost.
Yeah.
And more importantly, it brought my attitude that I brought from fighting games into like a miniature game, which for the most part I thought was just for fucking around. Like, I played a bit of 40k, and that was like the most casual thing on the fucking planet. A bit of Infinity, but I could not engage with the rule set.
I think what you're saying about characters, I completely agree with, because I was playing a lot of League of Legends at the time.
Yeah.
So that's got a like the exact same thing of every character is a complete individual. They've got their own move set. Yes, they can attack, or yes, they can move, but the damage they do from an attack or the how fast they move is different, you know.
Yeah.
And so, like, that naturally changes how you use each one. So, like, that translating over to, like, the reason I was bouncing off games like Infinity is because I find it hard to sort of like a list when it's like, oh, these are my guys, they haven't got names. It's like six of them and three of them, that's what I take, yay. Whereas I like the idea that I can go, oh, Shark, Angel, do you know how much work I get out of Angel? That girl, she does so much for me. And there's so, I think that conversation can be more charged within the community.
Yeah.
When you go between going, oh, taking four orcs when they've all got this, oh, that's really good, well, you know, you could get more damage if you took this, or, you know, maybe you took three of them and one of them. But then I think there's the sort of more granular conversations can happen around that, but not as much sort of emotional.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you can have more of a, well, objectively you can get better dice if you take this set out, where with, I don't know, just because they're named, it feels different, you know, because they stand out, you can sort of go, I get a lot of work out of Angel, well, I don't. It's like, well, that's immediately an interesting conversation can happen.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, even in like a 40k army, for example, the manner in which you identify with your model doesn't particularly come from like named characters. There are a couple of named characters in the 40k, but for the most part, your four sort of consist of people who are grunts.
Mm.
And half it comes from either the paint job, or like you really like a sculpt.
Yeah.
That kind of, or maybe you've got an image of an army in your head, like, I want a guy who only has plasma guns, kind of thing, that's just really fucking cool, and they all shoot them, blah blah blah. But yeah, in terms of like a named character, like, yeah, the same thing you have on Guild Ball, where people go, I think Jack's bald, I think Jack's the best character in The Fisherman, you're a moron.
Yeah.
The thing that I've had the exact same conversation from fighting game forums about, you know, King of Fighters, Tekken, Marvel vs Capcom, all that stuff, are people going, you know, oh, take my favourite character in Street Fighter 4, Hugo, who's like this big lumbering character, super slow, got really obvious weaknesses, like, you know, he's just big,
yeah.
It makes him really easy to hit, literally, with more of him to hit. Like, yeah, Guild Ball having a huge fat base and a really low defense.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, if people come into you, just smash you. Shit that would never work on another character, they can just get for free. But I got really attached to that character, and I had arguments all the time online about going, like, this guy's got so much potential that you're not seeing. And I go, and I love that even in games, I'm playing Street Fighter, where I'd gone on an online match and I'd tell a dude shit with a character that the other player just had not even anticipated or even seen.
Mm.
And my favourite thing in a game is where you do something and they go, oh, fuck, you can do that. Alright, I'll try again, and you just do it again. And they go, alright, maybe this, right, I've done it, I've jumped twice in a row, I've charged in twice in a row, surely now the counter-attack will push me out. Like, you're in there, you're double push, you're out. Anti-air, you're out of the air. Like, yeah, that kind of thing. You're seeing it in real time, people not pick up on what you're actually doing in the game. It's still the thing I really fucking love about Ball. Yeah. And yeah, Kingdom Free, like, for me, it's Kingdom Free in Guild Ball.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's what I like about Guild Ball, by definition. That's what I like about Kingdom Free.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going anywhere.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. It's just the whole fact that, like, all change. Like, that there's been small changes made to the core rules, but even just by listening to the podcasts or reading the blogs that have come out this week about the guilds that have changed, you know, without naming any specifics, you can tell that things have actually been reassessed. You know, I don't think there's a single model that hasn't just been going, oh, it'll be fine. You know, from the way, like, they talk about it in interviews, it sounds like the Steamforge guys look at each model and go, what do we need to change? You know, does it need coming up? Does it need going down? If it needs to stay in the same place, well, the core rules are changing around it, so we need to decide how to change it to make sure it stays in the same place.
Yeah.
Well,
for me, the ticket to balance in a game, especially a team-based one like this, if never make a model so good, they have to come along.
Yeah.
Never make a model so bad, it just guarantees you'll never bring them.
Yeah.
And for me, that's always a pro gamer, or like called Ryan Hart, and the character that came out one time, which was running a trailer, and they can go, the only way I can beat the character if I do something stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I've just got to bet the farm and just go nuts and hope I, like, and hope the other guy just gets crushed by the time I realise something going on. I hope I don't, like, that's the thing with like Take Vet Decimate, for example. She's definitely one of them characters who at the moment you've got to kind of go, alright, am I going to avoid her completely, or you've got to run at her and crush her immediately.
So
get her down to one health and just get on her and hope the guy just abandons you. That's been the core strength for Guild Ball so far. One of the great things about the game is the ability to look at teams and go, even who I think is the worst model on this team isn't guaranteed to be left at home.
Yeah.
There are some teams who are set up for like really cool janky style for play that you can go, you know what, I think even when, that's one of my favourite things, you know, one of the things, another thing that got me really into the game was having GB Keeper.
Yeah.
And it had all the cards on, so I could look at them at any time, and just going through teams going, oh man, Flash, that's a cool character, intensifying all that shit, and going, hey, you know what, maybe Midas goes in, crabs out, maybe you put Midas touch, you know, the push to net hit, and then Flash charge again, get a bunch of hit, push to net hit, fire intensifying, just wiping people out, and then you go, you can picture it in your head. Yeah. You don't, I know we are patterning, we are copywriting Boardfeel, but I know Boardfeel is completely different. One of the things I like about being able to look at the card, go through them, and come up with hypothetical strategy, you can kind of think on how doable it is, if it's preferable, coming up with like super specific thing for a team, going, oh man, I'd love to drop this on a player and just ruin their day.
Charming.
I try my best.
But what you said there about looking at how there's no one who's really has to stay at home, you know, if you can, depending on how you look at the card, depending on how you plan on using them, I don't think there's a single benched model, apart from maybe Stave, in Season 3, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of my highlights of Season 3 was being at Nationals, and I won't say who it is, because I don't know if they've continued to have this feeling, and or if they even want to be attached to this conversation, but like a really, really good Fish player came up to me after one game and just went, I know what you mean about Angel. And I was just like, fucking yes. I was like, yes.
You cracked the cash. Yeah.
I just felt like, I don't know, because I feel like I've been...
complete vindication.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, because it was like, it's not good enough for me to be successful with it. Someone who's good at it has to understand. Vindication is the exact word. And when someone came up and just went, yeah, I get what you mean about Angel, I was like, fucking yes.
That's a good thing about that. If a really good player can come up to you and you go like, oh, I'm not like that great of a player, but because of the theory, again, I know I'm going to keep saying it, in fighting games you have what we call the lab monster. A lab monster for people who only really play in training mode and figure stuff out, and they'll know shit like about the game. You'll block a thing and they'll go, I could have punished him for that. But when they play, they're absolute garbage.
Yeah.
But every time you do something wrong, go, you could have punished that, could have done something about that. That thing, that beats that, you know. And even in Guild Ball, it's not the same thing. If the theory is solid, you don't have to win every game. You know, you don't always make the best decision making at the time. But if the theory is solid, you can convince someone who is good at the game to go, you know what, that shit you're saying, I get what you're saying now.
And then you can live vicariously through them.
Yeah, in a way. if I turn around to you in a game, I'm like, upright, just run Angel at a fucking goal, I bet you we will. I've looked at him. I'm just having a quick look at the guy's team. Like, he puts the kick down. I go, you know what, I'm having a quick look at the guy. I reckon if you just park Angel in front of the goal, keep snapshotting, he won't even try and go for Angel. He'll just stay out in the middle middle of the field. You know, if you came up to me and went, you know what, I did it, and you're absolutely right. Like, you just can't know. He couldn't crack the nut
yeah.
at your own defence. He couldn't get the tackle. Or, you know, couldn't knock her down or whatever. I go, man, like, oh, good. You get a bit of, like, a high five moment, don't you? And it's not like I can turn around and go, I wouldn't be in that bed and go, like, oh, I won that game, baby. you pack on information. And again, the forum is great for that. There's some commentators I just fucking love to read on the forum. Epic Crick, probably one of my favourite forum commentators. A, funny, but B, kind of a bit of contrarian of it. Like, he's a guy after my own heart, you know, just a bit of a guy who's like going, whoa. If everyone's like loving a character change, he'll come and go, hey, you know, wait a minute. Before you all get out of hand, yes, Dave is shit.
It's like whenever you form an opinion, it's because you've had a quick flick through Gubs and you've gone, everyone likes him. No, I hate it. Or you've gone, oh, everyone hates it. I love it.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
I love it and I'll make it work. I'll hate it and I'll prove it doesn't work. Yeah.
I just think a lot of the models have like a secret potential. And
that is one thing I was slightly worried about when they were saying that everything is getting simplified. I think the fine line between simplified and dumbed down. do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't mean that to sound too like aggressive, but yeah, there's a fine line. And so when I first heard that, like, alarm bells kind of went and I was like, oh god. But, like, looking at what came out in the blogs, you know, I was quite confident that, yeah, that the game's not getting dumbed down. You know, everyone still does seem to have that individual character feel to them.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen the context that they're all in, but it definitely feels like they've all sort of kept the spirit of what they are.
Yeah. Like, again, my main thing at the moment is I'll know when I play it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm kind of right there with you when I'm concerned. My main thing when I read the blog as well is that when I see terms like go, we just... simplifying. I'm trying to think of another term from that fact. Normalize that kind of a. Oh, we're just going to normalize a character. Like, oh, who are you normalizing? My character. What's that? Like a flower for Algernon situation. It's like going. Go, oh man, I'm so smart. This guy's so fucking great right now. What do you mean you're normalizing him? Wait, you run into the bar to find out where you're. No. Just in a corner, like a momentous, non-momentous hero. Oh no, they got to a tapper, what they done here? But I'm fairly confident it's going to be a reet, basically.
It'll be reet.
That's the thing.
That is the Yorkshire Guildball motto. It'll be reet.
One of my main concerns is that oversimplification, and with simplification and like cleaning up the rules in a way comes a lack of identity, and you know. But I think they've done a good job where they've taken traditional, you know, Esther is a really good example. Empowered voice, super unique character trait, super unique. Super unique using damage, obviously. but that's the thing. They recognise that empowered voice could be just represented through character play, and that might serve her better generally. And it seems. If you got like a little unique token, you know, a little freeway token,
yeah.
You might like. I'm like for me, one of George and the Hunter from having a little 30 mil trap.
Yeah,
I always wanted as many of them if I could get on the board at once. Half the reason I wanted to play that mink is so I could have like 9 traps. Yeah, on the board. Yeah. If I could bring Mother over, I'd have like.
Yeah, yeah.
Me, that's just the perfect game. It's just 9 tokens.
Yeah, so what could you have had? You could have had JCar's big one, and then 3 from Chaska, 3 from Minx.
I think 7. If the most I could push it.
Or you could have 5 from Mother. Is it 5 from Mother, or is it 3?
3.
Or you could have 5 Harvest Mark. Yeah, so I think the Hunters is the way you get the most things out.
Yeah, most things from the board.
Oh, unless you're looking at union picks like Avarice and Greed.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, Brain Pan and Memory.
I really like it. I really like Avarice and Greed. I like Brain Pan and Memory too, exactly for that reason. Just extra, more on the board. I love that. But like, just if you look at a bit of the identity, something like, the core of the game has not really fundamentally changed a lot. I've not played with the Alchemist, but I know, I've read through the cards, and I've got a hypothetical, I've got a headcanon team, and I had a feeling of how my game plan would play if I had played.
In Season 3.
In Season 3.
With the Season 3 cards.
Yeah. in particular. I just didn't put them on the board. But with the changes they made to Kingdom 4 from what they've revealed so far, I could already tell just by what they've given some of the character that the push is going to be moving forward.
Yeah.
Not just...
You can sort of tell by all the models that came out on the blog that the it's something that Bryce actually mentions in the interview that I butchered later on in the episode, that one of the main things is they didn't like this sort of standoffish gameplay, you know, this sort of, well, I'm just going to stand back. And that idea of you're just waiting for the first person to get bored and run forward, and then the other person just capitalises on that mistake when the mistake was trying to play the game, you know. So it does seem that, like, from models that were released via the blog, all the cards we got to see before everything started coming out through the Media Guild, it does seem that everything is more about, it's about being active, it's about being in there, you know. And the change to Second Wind suggesting you can't get in, get out, you know.
Well, that's the thing, there are a lot of character tricks like that, like the fact Gut and String took such a big hit. I imagine you have to make the Back to the Shadow trap drop a lot less of a tempting option.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of characters who JK can just run in. I quite like that about him, actually. Like, I do think JK paid a fair enough price for that. He's a 1-inch melee guy with no knockdown. You know, there are plenty of characters who he could attack and go very, very wrong again. But when that does work out in your favour, the Gut and String trap manoeuvre, where you're just fucking out of there.
Yeah.
And you know, like,
6 inches off someone's movement. Yeah.
Yeah. And even with the new Gut and String trap manoeuvre, it will still be 4-4. Plenty of characters who that will just fucking ruin. But looking at that's just a unique thing with the character. I quite like that. Yeah, but making things that should have, like, Second Wind makes me think they intended that as an offensive character trait where you run in, maybe attack dog even further with the ball, trying, you know, threaten a bit. And what ended up happening when people were going, fuck that, scalpel walk in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kick,
yeah,
runs off, and you literally can't reach it.
Like one of the things at the fair where you sort of attach a bungee to your waist and you run in, you run as hard as you can, and then, like, she'd like just bam 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 bam, and then just sort of like jump and just be pulled back.
Yeah. Yeah, but I kind of like it. I don't know. I'm a bit half and half of that. No, I'm trying to think of the other kills I really wanted to get into in Kingdom 3. My engineer, my honor. I had a big stint with the Brewers. I made a really big effort to paint them, you know, nicely.
It's a good tartan effort you've done.
I'm half and half about that paint job. Well, I'm like completely, I'm like, wow, that's a really good paint job. I'm really happy with that tartan. It's like, man, they look like shit. And half of that was me looking on pictures of Facebook where people have like perfectly painted them, like fucking, you know, the light shark on like the model.
Oh, there's an amazing one that's on Gubs recently. It's like, I think he's called something like, they've called it something like the Barroom Brawl Brewers. And it's just like almost like a dark bar. So like on one point of them, they're like this bluish, brownish darkness, and it fades across till they've all got an OSL on them, where there's like this really nice warm flame. Incredible.
Yeah. I hate looking at pictures like that going, my model, shit, god damn it.
Beard Minis did a guide on his YouTube channel about how he's done his rat catches with OSL.
Oh yeah.
And there's like a secret step include, because he's just like, so all I do is I do this and I do this and I do this, and then handy viewer, such as you are, there you are. And I'm like, cool, okay. And I get my airbrush and I go, and it's like that episode of The Simpsons when he's like, ah, that's one fine looking barbecue. Why doesn't mine look like that? I'm just like, I followed the instructions. They look shit. Mine looks shit.
That can't be a painting guide ever though.
Yeah.
Like GW, I think they've put them back up now, but they used to do like articles and they have like 4 steps.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, put the base on, I'm with you. Put the, kicking cut on, yeah, give it a wash, I'm right there with you. And then the 4 pictures with like a perfectly painted dog. I go, and then just apply a few highlights, and bing, bang, boom.
It's that how to draw an owl. Step one, draw 2 circles. Step 2, draw the rest of the fucking owl. And it's just like...
No, SpongeBob. I remember a really good SpongeBob episode where Squidward, he goes, like, draw a perfect circle. And he draws, like, a perfect circle. And he goes, how did you do that? He goes, well, you start looking, like, he draws, like, Michelangelo's David. And then Crockett, like, runs out the rest of it, and then just a circle left. Like, yeah, like every fucking painting guide ever.
Yeah.
I can watch a guy on, like, a Twitch or, you know, YouTube, like, a 4-hour thing of him literally painting a model in front of your eyes, slowly, like, with a palette and everything, and you go, yeah, I'm getting you. Then you just apply a little brown here, bang, I've got perfect gold. And you're going, fucking, I just watched it. It don't work. You lying bastard.
You do like a Bob Ross style paint at home, following along with him, just going, how? It's not working.
followed every step of the fucking thing. Like, I hate when you see like big globs of paint on their paintbrush, and I do mine, and like the perfect tension break just covers the whole. Like, fucking hell. That's another thing in my life, okay. Some of the sculpts I'm not so in love with, but a lot of the models actually are like the brew of my favourite sculpts in the game.
I think Pint Pot is my favourite sculpt.
Yeah.
In the entire. I think his character is perfectly encapsulated in that sort of stance of fucking come on then.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to painting the rest of the room and giving them a full tartan treatment. Yeah, from the film, I'm like, I'd reuse for like D&D stuff.
Yeah.
If only the people I play D&D with won't go, they just, you'll ball miniature and you fucking mom.
Yeah.
Go, take a day off, would you? Yeah, you walk into a bar, there's a guy with a big fat guy with a beer being thrown. Dave, what the fuck are you doing, Ryan? Just couldn't you just grab some goblins? D&D goblins? No, fine. I'll strike them, that's all. No,
the only thing I will say is that I think you, when you got lucky, you were still half and half which way you were going to go with the kickoff models, and then you sort of painted him to look like a mason, and then you went full in on brewers, and you really like him, so you play him in most brewer lineups, don't you?
Yeah.
But like, all of your guys have got a yellow base, one guy with a blue base, and it makes me twitch every single time you put him down.
Oh, no, I really like that, because it's like, it really reminds you that he's not really in the guild. Like, yeah. If I ever start making, I'll probably paint a yellow brewer's one to give the illusion that he's coming from over.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of looking like actually showing up from the other guild. Kind of one of my favourite things about the model. You know, the character. Other than him having one arm, which is fucking cool.
Yeah.
A really nice model, like big ass knife. Like, yeah, looks dumb. But no, occasionally, the abundance of stitching can get a bit but generally I quite like it. I really like a lot of the sculpts and models.
I think they all reflect the model, that the character they are really well.
Yeah.
I even love how Jack has got that little, he's got his hand that he's like, come on yeah. Over this side of the pitch, you can do it.
Yeah, Jack's probably my favourite model. Yeah. And Kraken
point the point.
Yeah.
The alt sculpt where he's about to harpoon someone looks sick as well there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, what were you, I think you know the moment I'd kind of said take the game a bit seriously though. When we went to that, buddy. Not the escalation league where I had my fuck around.
Yeah.
Because that was so casual. I started out with engineering because I played Hunt Uncle later on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I
won that escalation league because I played Chark. So the first two games, it was just completely busted, and you just couldn't fucking do anything. Because I was like, yeah, and then Shark scores three goals, so bye.
Yeah, I remember playing against, I played against your girlfriend, Mortician. That was the most intense game we've ever fucking had.
Yeah.
But yeah, when we went to the tournament, Travelling Man, where it was basically my first proper tournament, and I was just playing the game, whatever, going through them. And then when it was like last game, JK walks up and goes, oh, you got second. First one, I go, oh, well, what do you know? I had that thing, you know, that thing in your head where you go, I might not be completely shit. I might actually give it a fair try.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I half wonder if I'd got like, you know, eighth or something. Or I don't know how, I don't know if I would have taken it seriously. I'm like going, oh, it's fun for a casual game.
Yeah.
But I think someone literally, like, having a tournament and like having it basically ranking and someone coming up to you and going, you know, you could actually be good at this.
Yeah.
Here's
a dice that proves you're not shit.
Effectively, yeah. Like, again, because it was my first one, it made me go like, oh, I might, this might be my game, sort of thing. Okay, yeah, the one any miniature games I play in, I really like painting.
Yeah.
But I wasn't like addicted to any miniature game. You know, there wasn't a system that was like, oh yeah, this is my game now.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we came back from that time, I'm like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I had like pricing with me. I was probably most of it walked away from the tournament before.
Well, that's because you had some sort of magic raffle.
We had raffle tickets. I think I bought 10 altogether.
Yeah, because you bought 10 and you won 5 things.
Yeah, I won a shitload. Me and you took the first 2 prizes.
That's when I got the farmer's box. And that's when I almost fell out of love with Guild Ball, because I played the farmers when I really shouldn't have played the farmers, because I can't figure the farmers out.
Oh, God. From them farmer captivation. God love Windle.
Yeah. That'd be all that ever happened. I'd play the... The only thing I'd achieve in the game was the massive Windle activation.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, okay, that happened. Win the game. Now I'm glad I got it in.
I love from that. Like, Windle is just that perfect model you need when you're having you just one dream activation away. Like, oh yeah, great. Oh, thank God, Windle here. Knock down, plus one tack. Snare, 2 tack. Shield out, plus 4 tack. All right, crowd out. 5. Can we get any more up in here? Tina, get up in here.
Yeah.
Plus 4. Fucking, can we get any more tack? You ever seen from Drift on Dawn?
Yeah.
By the guy outside the club.
Yeah.
Like, plus 1 tack for you. Yeah. We got snared, we got knocked down. if you can find Lower Defence anywhere else, kill it. And that was just bit like, yeah, oh god, I really like farming. I love that mechanic of putting additional shit on the board.
Yeah,
man, maybe I'm looking kind of brain.
Just tickles your brain, get extra things.
Ooh, yeah, like more of me on the board now. Yeah. I'm up for it now because I've got 5 of these things and you've got none of them. Haha. Once you're playing Hunter 7, shit, I've lost already. To be fair, playing against farmers, you probably have lost already. that whole run you had, the farmers,
that's when my season 3 arc just went into the depths of despair, to the point where I almost sold everything that I had that was Gilboy and just quit the game. And then I was saying that I was thinking about that, and JC just went, just play your fish again. You enjoyed playing your fish. Why aren't you playing your fish? And I was like,
I don't know. I don't know why I stopped playing them.
And he was like, just play them again. And I played them again. And I went, oh yeah, I really enjoy this game. Like, I fucking surprised myself. Oh, yeah, and then from there, just sort of a steady increase into winning that tournament, you know, completing the arc of
it's weird, isn't it? You'd think with a farmer you'd be on your high and the farmer brought you down to like a new low.
Yeah.
And really, like, you're on your golden arc now.
Yeah.
Which I'm hoping gets nerfed into oblivion.
You had your 30 seconds, shut up.
Alright, fucking.
Do you not remember what you said earlier? Do you not remember the last episode?
Yeah, I know. I disavow everything I've ever said.
Are there any games in particular? Any like singular games that stand out for you in this season?
One of my favourite games, right? How fucked it was. That Escalation League. Pretty much my very first, playing someone other than you and Jim. And the guy put Butchers on the table. And it was like, you know, Escalation League, 3-on-3, on like the small pitch. And my pick were Ballista, Hoist, and Salvo.
Oh, that's sickening.
And
not Ratchet.
His pick was like Meat Hook, you know, I think Fillet, Meat Hook, and Boar.
Mm.
And I opened the turn. And it was like 38 VP. I just get the ball, open the turn. I have like dead ball Fillet, she goes down. And I like line up Boar and Meat Hook, and I just breach through and knock them both down. And he's just started the game, so there's no momentum.
Yeah.
And I like, alright, I'm 4 feet picking off. All literally everyone's knocked down, you don't have any momentum.
Yeah. I'm halfway to winning, and all you can do is stand up.
And you're like, yeah, Boar stands up, Meat Hook stands up. Alright, yeah, Calvo walk in, get a fat ball, bang. I'm like going, wow, this game's fucking easy. But it was just that, it was probably the most, in the entire time I'm playing, it's the most horrific activation I've ever had, where, like, you've gone from having a team to nothing in, like, one go.
Yeah.
And just, like, the opening turn, like, just like, done, thin.
Yeah.
And, brutal, but, first off, like, oh, by the way, that's pretty clean. Good job we didn't get bought a fucking charge, that guy's horrific. But,
especially when he's taken out a third of your team.
Weirdly, a lot of my most memorable games, like probably playing against JC is always memorable. Because the first time I played against him was against Ecover Hunt, and I remember that being a really good game. He brought a really weird team. I remember looking back, that was like an all-throw roller team or something. In fact, he put all-throw on the board to begin with. I was like, looking back, I'm like going, fucking hell. But at the time, I didn't know about fucking Gilboa, so I was like going, oh, this Ulfra guy seems like pretty fucking dangerous.
Oh my god, you get to bring an orc.
Yeah, like, this guy seems pretty fucking dangerous. This model's like, you know, 40, half a kilogram. Like metal. And then I remember, like, every time I play against each other, it comes super close. And like, again, that other tournament, I think in fact that tournament I got second, I think Jake was the only guy I lost to. He played Fisherman, I think, in that one. And it was one of the first games I had where it was when I really should have done something different
kind of
game. Going, oh, I could have fucking won that if I knew where I could have done something to put my foot in the door, and I didn't take it.
It's difficult because you walk away from them games going, well, I learned something new for next time, I won't be that dismissed take again. We also walk away going, why am I such a fucking idiot? I could have won that game.
I never walk away going, you live and learn. I go, you fucking moron.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Like, you had that. It was there on the board waiting to be seen. Why didn't you see it? We always have super close game. And the others, again, it's like, just nice guys like Matt and Chris and all that lot. Just super. They're the ones that I always have. I don't even remember the details of the game particularly. They're just, you know, nice guys who you meet.
Mm.
And obviously the last tournament we played, that was a memorable game. In fact, I think that might be the first time I've been 12 heroes at a tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. When we played in absolute silence.
Well, that's a lesson for you all, ladies and gentlemen. You can always look back and laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, laugh.
You had your 30 seconds, stop talking.
But yeah, but fat outlaw game, I just don't remember. God, we played way too fucking much. But
for me, I think some of my most memorable ones have got to be, there was one that was memorable for all the wrong reasons. We'd gone down to the Potters. They do like a monthly tournament. I think it's the last Sunday of every month. It's really good. It's a really nice venue, really decent pub. I think it always sells out, and everyone there is like relentlessly nice, which is awesome. And then and I was playing Dave, and he'd just come off the back of a game that had ended probably a way that neither him and the person he was playing were happy with. I think he was actually playing JC. Well, like, the clock had died, and it was a sort of thing of, well, if the clock hadn't died, maybe he would have won.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he came in and sat down, and he said, sorry. And I was like, uh-huh. And this is when I was playing the Farmers and didn't know, and was just playing very badly. And he put down a Captain Ferrite Blacksmith team.
Yeah.
So he kicks. I pick the ball up. Activation one. Ferrite goes, get over here, Ryan. Like, charges into me, scores, and I'm like, oh, great. So I kick the ball back out. So he goes, Iron goes. Activation two comes in, gets the ball, scores. I was like, My guys are all still on the deployment line at this point, and I'm just like, what the fuck do I do here? So that was memorable just due to the nature of how brutal it was. I remember one game at Vengeance against Paul Preston from TNG Productions.
Yeah.
And that was because that was the single most chill game of Guild Ball I think I've ever played in my life. Because we both just sat down, and he put a Scatha football team down, and he just went, I like playing football. And I was like, cool, so do I. And then, just because I like their content, I got talking about The Walking Dead, and we ended up talking for far too long, which we then realised was off the clock, because we were picking game plan decks. So we were like, oh shit, we should probably start playing Guild Ball again. So we just had this really cool, like, casual conversation, and it was the first, and I won that game, which was also nice. Then another memorable game for me was from Nationals, and it was, and I'll tell you what was quite nice is that Barry mentioned it on the Roll Better as one of his most memorable games, because it was, I remember everything about it just being this clinical, clean, precise, just the way I love to play Guild Ball. Everything was perfectly, immaculately measured, and it was the, I'm doing this is my intention, he has ended here, he is engaging him, and him not engaging him, he is in cover, clock over to you. And this is happening, and just, it was such a clean cut game, it was so good. And then there was that atrocious moment where Iron, like, just a fully stacked Iron just could not kill a Sakana on one health, and I took the counter attack, and I was just like, oh, nice one, tackle. And he was like, okay, close control. And I was like, oh, no, I've said it, I'm going to stick to it. I should have asked if he had close control before I took the result. He took the tackle, and then he attacks him again. I was like, oh, he's going to die. And he didn't die. So then Sakana was like, attack to dodge away out of your melee, tackle, run off and score a goal. And then, like, there's just a sort of flip of that. And then another horrible moment from that was he must have realised at some point that I'd forgotten he had the game plan, which was it costs an extra momentum to take a shot if you're the closest model. And I had a momentum, and I had Angel looking to get the ball, and he'd just spent the entire turn, like, obviously once he'd realised, just throwing models as far up the pitch as possible. So I got Angel up there, and I just went, oh, right, I'm going to take my shot. And he just sort of looked at me and just went, I'm going to do this now before you, like, move and spend the influence on Super Shot and everything. And just sort of tapped the card, and I was just like, fuck. And I was like, right, I'm not swearing at you, I'm swearing at me. And he was like, no, I get it. And I'm just like, yeah. I was like, oh, nimble, move into cover. Fuck my life. But yeah, that was a great game just because of how,
oh, Major, fine, kick defense.
Yeah. Six defense in cover, whatever. But then, like, Sledge just went, instruction, I'm gonna tackle because I want to. Bye. Yeah. But yeah, but then apart from that, like you said, there's so many games that don't really, like, you don't remember the different things. You just remember who you play, and, like, I remember being at one of the Leodis tournament, one of the tournaments at Leodis, playing Chris Chal, playing Chris, plays the Church Mining Guild. I don't want to murder his surname. It just, that was again a really nice clean game. Like for the win, I was charging someone into Vet Fangtooth to bounce off them. And after, well, I was looking at the charge, but like because of how I'd laid my widgets down, we knew exactly where they'd started. And I took it, and then we both realised, because we both forgotten, that he had resilience. So Chris was just like, just take it back then. Like we both completely forgot about that rule. I was just like, you know, people like that who just great people.
Yeah,
that's what you remember, isn't it? Great people more than great games.
I think we turned into a right fucking clip show, haven't
we? Yeah. Yeah, it's like the, it is like a literal end of season clip show, you know. Yeah. Like
looking back at our favourite time.
Yeah. Like when O'Neill went through the Stargate, and then with, and then with the golf clubs when he went with the golf balls when they were knocking it in because they were stuck in a time loop. Oh.
That became my favourite episode. That get you one. Instant classic. Yeah, Potteal.
Mm.
Teal, that'd be a great guild role model.
Yeah.
I demand if I get a G1 team.
That'd be such a good guild as well, because the captain's legendary could just be Jaffa, Cree, and then they all do something.
Before we both immediately invent a Stargate miniature game. No, I think the most important thing is Kingdom Free, Alex, and like, basically, our entire friendship is based on a fucking game.
Yeah.
Okay, we effectively didn't talk at all. Out kind of.
No.
Like, compared, you knew Jim.
Mm.
And even then, that wasn't like you knew Jim, that was your girlfriend, you and Jim's girlfriend knew each other. You basically got put, like, I imagine a play date of kind.
Yeah. Went to go see Star Wars, that was nice.
And I like first few times we met, I'm like going, all right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, very well. I'm gonna go play PlayStation 4 while you two play it.
Mm-hmm.
While I eat a pack of Co-op donuts.
Yeah.
But when I started actually getting into it, and the whole thing of getting in touch and going, do you want to play a game of Guild Ball?
Guild Ball.
Without like other people around.
Yeah.
You can't believe when you meet a friend through other friends, and then you actually go, oh, maybe we should hang out. We're grown ups and we're allowed. God damn it. I think the main thing I felt guilty about getting into Guild Ball, me in particular, that a friend Jim really wanted to get us both into Infinity.
Yeah.
And we both basically turned around, like, we only really met because you started playing Infinity with Jim.
Yeah.
We both met, turned around and gone, oh, I don't really like Infinity, but we both like Guild Ball, am I right?
So we're going to go play that.
Yeah. You get a knob, Ed.
Well, you sit there and, I guess, not play Infinity because there's only one of you, so bye. But his main problem was that the butchers weren't killing as effectively as some other guilds were.
We're gonna get Jim on the podcast at some point.
And getting him in with the season 4 butchers, maybe the cooks, to get after it.
But yeah, like, and even when we initially decided to start the podcast, I can't remember what we were doing it, but every time we had a game of Guild Ball, we had basically a 50-minute rant about either why my victory was completely justified or the fishermen were bullshit that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think moving on from that, like just going, well, we've got gear.
Mm.
Should we just record our bullshit conversation? And here we are. Buddy, how many episodes are we in now?
This is 23.
Yeah, we passed the half a year mark.
No.
How long have we got? Not long, almost half a year worth of episodes. You know what? It's flown by as well.
Yeah.
But out of all the weird things to have come out of this, I think just actually sitting down and recording a fucking podcast and putting it out there. And I think the crazy thing was that people actually fucking tune in.
That, I'll tell you what, that's one thing we haven't mentioned which was amazing. Going to, like, the community, just getting in touch and going, yeah, I like what you're doing. That's nice. Yeah. Like, there was one thing, like, on Twitter, just like last week, someone said, Josh said, oh, basically, warning, there's an incredibly, a dangerously high sodium content towards the Navigators in the latest Firm podcast.
Yeah.
And a few other people were saying, yeah, basically, they need to get over it, and I sort of waded in and said, just to clarify, we're not trying to say this as like high level strats or like top tier like reviewing of anything.
Yeah.
Like, we're two players who are mediocre. We're mediocre, and through a filter of A, being mediocre, B, trying to improve, and C, how we're seeing it at the time. Like, you'll notice that we're twisting a lot about the Navigators, and a lot less about the blacksmiths, because the last few games we've had into the blacksmith, we started to crack that nut, and it's a very personal thing, and it's our sort of, I don't know, there's not a way of saying it without making it sound more grandiose than it is, but this is basically documenting how we improve over each thing, like each overcome each obstacle that comes, you know.
Yeah, the way I view it is, like, I know I'm fucking obvious, it's okay, my opinion is my opinion,
yeah,
and I reserve the right to change it on a whim at any time. And more importantly, like, I think one of the things I've quite liked about doing this is going, like, alright, like, try our best to just, you know, talk about how we actually feel about the game.
Yeah.
And for me, if I fell out of love with Guild Ball tomorrow, I won't keep coming on here and talking about it.
Mm.
It won't even occur to me continuing the podcast if I didn't like Guild Ball. About going, well, I've fallen out of love with the game, thank you for listening, peace out.
Yeah. Welcome to the firm and Lord of the Rings podcast.
Maybe. But almost everyone who's approached me at a tournament or, you know, in person, and, you know, Facebook messaging, some Twitter messaging, almost everyone who got in touch and gone, we really like the podcast, has basically come at it from the angle of, I like that it's obviously just you saying what you think.
Mm.
It's not kind of pre-packaged or pre-approved opinion. There isn't a poll on Gubs every week going, you know, Ryan thinks they're navigating for OP, tune in to them.
Nah.
And the poll comes back and going, they're not OP, and I go, well, I've changed my mind.
Yeah.
And going, like, yeah, that's my take on it. And I reserve the right to wrap my rain back as much as possible. And yeah, that's the thing. The way we're documenting it at the moment, going into season 4, I'm fully expecting, because they're not even in the general public yet.
Mm.
We've got like a documentation of, like, going, here's how I felt about it at the time.
Mm.
We could tune back in a month, and I could go, you know what, I've figured out, I know the answer every time now.
Yeah.
It's my most confident matchup, blah, blah, blah. But no, I couldn't turn around and go, well, I only said that thing before because that was just the opinion floating around on Gubs at the time. You know, I didn't look on and go, oh, you know, OP, yes or no? Well, I'll represent both sides. It's, yeah, that was my opinion from playing against them.
Mm.
And I hope that's why people like tuning in. And I don't know, it's really cool to get a fucking message. It's good to know that people beyond our family and friends actually tune in.
Mm.
And I don't know about you, Alex, but on saying goodbye to season 3, I think I'm going to be around a fair bit to talk about season 4.
Yeah.
If only to be proven right or wrong. But if there's anything more to say on that front.
I think it's been a particularly sort of soft chat, this. And I think that's mainly because of the sort of transition and sort of looking back and getting a bit gushy about it.
Well, next episode is literally the season 4 episode.
Mm.
And I know we joked about that last time, but next we'll be talking about every season 4 thing we can get our hands on.
Mm.
We'll have season 4 games that we've played, you know, we'll have played.
Yeah.
We'll be going in with all the new stuff, all the new opinions, all the new rage.
Yeah.
And I don't mind having a kind of subdued one to go, yeah, this is season 3, this has been open off. It's effectively a recap of the history of the podcast. We're going in with literally a fresh start with a nice goodbye to season 3.
Yeah. And what a goodbye it was. So with that goodbye to season 3, we say hello to season 4 and this solid attempt, I'm going to call it, at a chat with Bryce, who, bless him, he put a lot of effort into this conversation, because for someone with a degree in journalism, radio journalism, might I add, I did not half butcher this, you know. So we go, okay, you know, I've been stressing about this, been thinking about this, you know, first time we've got an actual member of Steamforged stuff on the podcast, you know, it's got to be a big one. Okay, we're talking about season 4, it's going to be about the core rule changes, okay, it's going to be a big one. And then I just sort of forgot how humans interact. So I mean, big up to the patience of Bryce here. I hope you enjoy it.
You apologise now, Alex. You apologise to the people.
I do. I sincerely apologise. I
haven't even heard it yet. I'm going to be there with the listener. I'm going to leave a bad review on the third podcast.
Yeah.
That interview with Bryce was a shit show.
I didn't think, you know what? I didn't think that we were going to get kicked out of the media group just for being bad.
Plenty of time for that, buddy. Yeah. Plenty of fucking time for that.
Right, I hope you at least get some sort of entertainment out of it.
First of all, thanks very much for taking time, you know, to join us. I say us, Ryan's not here. So I'll jump straight into it. And sort of the big question is, when did you sort of start the work on season 4? Like, at what point in season 3 did you go, yeah, I think it's time for a new, basically, edition?
So pretty much, like, It's weird because we're kind of never not working on stuff. Like, even when season three, like, it's the curse of the game developer that, like, as soon as you release something, you start looking at it and going, ah, oh, we could have done this better, we could have done this better, we could have done this better. So there was a couple of points from pretty early in season three, like, tapping on passes, like, we were like, hold on, this doesn't, we could have maybe done this better type thing. And that's just something that happens, you know, like, as soon as you lock something and as soon as it goes out to the public, you're like, ah, oh, we should have done that, we should have done that. But I think officially we started working on about a year ago, maybe slightly more than that. Because I know, like, so Jamie's very much the project lead on Guild Ball, and he started working on some stuff for season four, like, yeah, probably about a year ago now, actually. And then obviously stuff's been in playtesting for many months by this point. And like it as well, you can never playtest anything enough, I think, is the other thing, that like no matter how long you have to playtest stuff, you're still gonna walk some stuff and go, I just wish we'd had like two more weeks or an extra day just to test stuff. But
yeah, like 2 weeks after it drops, there'll be something and you'll go, oh man.
Yeah, it is the curse. Like it's something like, especially sometimes someone will be like, you know, like you have all your playtesters, you have like the Lawyers Guild read over stuff, we have a rules editor, we have Oz obviously, and we all read through stuff, and then the day something gets released, someone's like, oh, is this interaction intentional? And we're like, that's totally deliberate, that's how that's supposed to work. I do apologise because I don't know if I've said on air, but I do have a cold, so to anyone that's listening, I apologise if I cough or splutter or generally sound awful during this recording. Because I'm actually off sick for a couple of days from work. But yeah, also I'm rambling. So to answer your question, about a year ago was when we sort of officially started working on season four.
Hey, if you didn't ramble, it'd be pretty boring and pretty short. So, you know.
That's true, actually, yeah. You imagine that was just like, oh yeah, so when did you start working on it? A year ago. Next question.
Yeah. So next question would be, what triggered it? And then you'd be like, boom, there we go, done. So.
Yeah, just one question, boom. We can get through this in 5 minutes if we're fast. Like,
job done, you know, a 10-minute episode sorted, finished, out the door.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah. Shortest developer interview ever, it'd be brilliant. You could set a record.
So, like, yeah, so what was there anything that triggered it? You said that, like, you're always kind of working on it, but is there any sort of point where you go, right, we've kind of got enough here, we should start putting this all together for season four?
Basically, it was just an acknowledgement of that's actually weirdly more of a production thing, in terms of we knew season four from pretty much from when, not quite from when season three came out, because obviously it's been a long season, because we knew we needed to make, we knew we wanted to make changes from season two to season three pretty quickly, and we wanted to change the seasonal release to match SteamCon. But from, I think, literally, it was pretty much SteamCon last year was the point where we were like, right, it's a year to go production-wise and planning-wise and playtesting-wise. This is the time to start and this is the time to get into it. And that's when you start sort of going through all the random files of notes that you've assembled and, you know, all the little bits you've just written down and gone, X should work like Y, you know, and then you start actually going, right, let's test this because it's just a random thought we had 2 months ago. And yeah, so, and it's weird because we discovered some stuff as we went through playtesting. I'm trying to think. One of the big ones was when we started a year ago. So the farmers have had quite a big, I know there's embargoes and stuff, so I'll talk very, very lightly around stuff, but the farmers have had quite a big change in terms of the playbook construction. And that, and in terms of playbook construction and their abilities in terms of not having tooled up anymore.
I think the blog actually said about how everyone's got everyone's got two on one hit, and whether it's momentous or not. Yeah.
So like the planters all have it non-momentously and the reapers all have it momentously, and then their playbooks scale from there. But obviously they've lost tooled up. And that's just something that weirdly, like we knew we wanted to adjust farmers because they're pretty early on in playtesting. We knew that there was a problem with their team construction because you were seeing the same kind of eight models all the time.
Yeah, there's pretty much like, when you see it at tournaments, there's like the Grange list and the Thresher list, isn't it? Well, it's mainly the Thresher list, isn't it, to be fair?
pretty much. And so we knew that was a problem, and we knew that obviously tooled up is for a BT team like like farmers, it's very hard not to bring Tooled up. And so we tried it on a few different models and we tried a few different ways of doing it, and just nothing was kind of fixing that core problem that their team construction was very limited. And then actually quite late on in playtesting season 4, I think it was Perkins just had the brainwave of him and like, hold on, I know this is going to sound mad, but what if we take Tooled up and put all of the momentous, put all of their damage up to compensate? And we were like, yeah, that sounds pretty mad, but let's give it a try.
Yeah, you're right, that does sound mad.
Yeah, it seems like coming out of the blue, you know, especially relatively late in the playtesting process for season 4, we're like, oh, I don't know. But then we playtested it and we're like, oh my god, this frees up so much of the farmers' ability. You know, it frees up so much of their team construction. It means we can do things that are really interesting. It means we can really try and equalize the model pick rate and not have the same sort of reliance on the certain models that they were always bringing, and we can make other people better options. But yeah, so a year ago, whenever we started, well, a year ago we didn't start playtesting, fair play. A year ago we started looking at core rules changes that we wanted to do. But we had no hint, you know, like even when we started season 4 playtesting, we didn't have a hint of what we wanted the farmers. Like the initial version of season 4 farmers, actually, they went through quite a few changes, but like it was a lot of tinkering until we sort of took that step back and went, took that step back and went, hold on, look at the big picture here. What is the problem? How do we, let's try something mad to try and fix this problem. And then we playtest and we're like, oh, this works. This is cool. This changes how they work, but it's really, they still feel like farmers, and they're a BT team that doesn't really work like any other BT team, and it's really cool. So like you obviously have some stuff planned in at the start of any process, like, you know, there was stuff we knew we wanted to do going into season 4. We were like, right, model X definitely needs to come down a little bit, model Y probably needs to come up a little bit, stuff like that. But some stuff can come up actually really late in the day. One of the coolest things of being a dev is kind of thinking on your feet and being able to react to, like, because you have to sometimes make the decision of like, so we had this great idea, but it's quite late in the day. Do we feel confident that we have the time to implement this idea as well as we can, given that we don't have as much time as we would like to do it?
Yeah.
And there were some things that we decided not to because it was too, you know, it didn't feel right to make such a big change late in the day. But with the farmers, we had enough time and we're just looking at it and we're like, this just feels right. You know, this feels like the change to make here. And so yeah, like adapting to stuff that comes up and adapting to ideas that come up, even sometimes quite late in the process, is really, really important. And I've forgotten the question again. So I think that, did that answer it? What was the question? I'm all hopped up on cold medication, so
I'll pretend to have an excuse as well.
I just sort of realised there I've been talking for about 10 minutes and I was like, I've completely forgotten where this had started and
it's all good, mate. In that ten minutes I've got my wife's come in, I've taken the two dogs that were in the studio, I've chucked them out into the kitchen, you know, it's all good. Like you said, that part of the process for like for example that one, you realised quite late in the day and it was an entire guild that was changing. So when you look at it, did you go along and sort of, did you start with the core rules, or did you start and go, right, this guild, there is something wrong with it on the whole and we need to like amend that? Or do you look at the players, or like, so which part of the process did you start with first?
So definitely core rules. Like that was definitely the first thing that like a year ago was like, right, how do we make the core rules both more accessible for new players, simpler to understand, and how do we make them better as well as the other point. But we were going on the making them better front. I think season 3 is pretty solid as far as core rules go. I think it's pretty hard to argue that is a very good season, that's a very good tight rule set. And so we knew we didn't want to make tons of changes. But we definitely want to change a few places, like the getting the momentum for kicking, not just from turn 2 onwards, and implementing game plan cards into the core rules rather than as an additional product, and also obviously tap in passes, because that felt very odd that you didn't get the -1 TN if you're like standing an inch, it's like a quarter of an inch away from your body, it's a 4-up. But if you're 4 inches away from the enemy goal, it's a 3-up. And that was just something that we knew relatively early on. And those are the kind of places that you start with, you start making changes. And then later on, once you kind of have those settled in, then you start looking. Obviously, we knew some guilds and some models we wanted to change going into the season 4 playtesting. Like one of the earliest ones that we knew we wanted to come down was Hoist, because he is, that model is in every single engineer lineup I think we saw in season 3. And so
it's,
we knew
it's Captain Mother Hoist, isn't it, really?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And we knew going into season 4 that we knew that model was going to come down a little bit, and we're going to hit, we knew we were going to hit survivability. And so, yeah, you start off with a rough idea, you start off with the core rules, and you start off with like certain things that you know you want to change. And then you very often discover other ones as the process goes on. And that kind of comes back to what I was saying earlier about like thinking on your feet and being able to adapt to changing circumstances and playtest their feedback.
Yeah. So like what, on the whole, what was sort of the, of almost like the objective season 4? When you sort of went, right, these are the finished rules, we're happy with them. What was it that you'd think that you've actually achieved changing from season 3?
Rationalization, in a weird way, is one of the biggest things that we think we achieved in terms of the two things that the two kind of major changes, I think, are tap and passes and the one momentum for going first.
Yeah.
For kicking, rather, sorry. And both of those things were things that we got a lot of questions on and weren't particularly intuitive, I think, because you saw on the rules forum, you got quite a lot of questions on them. And that was also, the rules forum actually informed quite a lot of, there are a number of smaller wording changes that went into the rule book as well, because they're like, technically, we don't need to do this because the rule is in the rule book. But it's a question we get asked a lot. And if it's a question we get asked a lot, that means potentially the rules that we have in the rulebook aren't quite as clear as they need to be. So let's add just an extra little sentence here or reword the phrase just to make sure that it is clearer and it works as intended, you know. But yeah, so the main thing with core rules is hope to make them easier to understand and to rationalize the points of confusion for newer players, I think, is the core one. Because obviously it doesn't matter if you've been playing the game for years and you know exactly how everything works, that's great. You don't need the rule book. But the rule book is to help newer players get into the game, and also I guess to sometimes someone who has played for a while will just miss a rule or be playing incorrectly and obviously need it as a reference. But the primary thing is to make it as easy as possible for a new player to pick it up, read it through, and get and start playing the game. So that's kind of the main objective you go into when you're trying to write core rules.
Cool. Yeah, so it does seem that you've been making like changes sort of across the board, like with Guild Ball, to sort of target new players. Like I think even as far back, I think it's fair to say, like even as far back as Kickoff, you know, like it's a one box starter set, get everything in it you need, and then like now moving over to the plastics and stuff. How like intentional do you think those changes have been targeting the new players, like as opposed to sort of, I don't know, not just sort of keeping old players happy, like. Do you think it's a particularly drastic shift?
I don't know. I don't know if I'd say drastic, but certainly the aim of the game and the aim of, as I say, core rules and of products like Kickoff is to draw new people in. Because if you don't draw new people into the game dies. That's just a hard and fast rule of how every game works, you know? Yeah. If you don't have new people picking up, eventually the old people will move on or like won't have time to play or will run out of money or whatever, and the game will slowly drop off. And that's not what we want for Guild Ball. We want it to be a vibrant product that continues for a long time. And the best way to make sure that happens is to keep bringing new people into the game and keep engaging new people and getting them excited about the game. So that's been a very deliberate effort, and you can see it with the plastic boxes as well. In terms of the aim is you just need to pick up one plastic box, you've got everything you need to play your team.
So
we have made a real effort over the last really year or so to draw new players in and to aim things so that they are as easy as possible for new players to pick up. So that's been a very deliberate effort on our part.
Yeah. Is that one of the reasons why like the rosters have changed to 12 as well? Like you just need two of them boxes?
Partially. That's more because we, oddly enough, actually considered not requiring a roster at all. We actually just considered not letting everyone use the guild, their whole guild. But having the roster on it does make it easier. As you say, if someone's bought two boxes, there's your 12 models. And that's better for newer players because they don't feel as lost and feel like they have to hunt down every single model in the guild. But the other one was we wanted to equalise pick rates across the guilds and acknowledge that guilds are bigger now than they were at the start of Season 3. Like when we went to a 10-model roster, I think every guild had access to 12 in-guild models plus Union, I think. And now every guild is going to have 16 or 17 models, counting their minor guilds and stuff like that. So with that, generally speaking, more models for each guild and more access for each guild, raising the limit on your roster size just made a bit more sense, particularly if, as we're hoping in Season 4, every single model is viable, and so it's still quite a tight competition for those 12 spaces, but it just makes it a little bit easier, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
was there any other changes that you considered making to the OPD? Because like one thing I've noticed with like a lot of the changes that have been coming, like as we've seen cards come through the blog post and as we've seen the core rule changes, it sort of feels like, I don't know how right this is, but it feels like a lot of the changes have been made to almost speed up the game. And one thing I was wondering is how much of that has got to do with like game plans being off the clock, but also did you ever consider like changing a tournament length game?
Changing a tournament length game actually isn't something we've ever really considered because we think the 45 minutes each on the death clock is, like, having played a lot of games of Guild Ball on the clock and having watched a lot of games of Guild Ball played, I think that feels right.
Yeah.
But what we it's more aimed at speeding the game up in terms of we didn't like the kind of standoffish playstyle that was starting that was becoming very evident in Season 3. And we're not a big fan of, you know, you've seen the games yourself where people just sit back and don't engage and pass the ball around to generate momentum and never kind of actually engage in the game. And we wanted to make a few more tools for people to just go, no, if you're going to sit back like that, I'm going to come in with some big aggressive play and start getting into the game, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was kind of that was part of it. It wasn't speeding the game up maybe a little bit, isn't the worst. No, that'd be pretty good if it happened, but certainly the main thing was a desire to reduce standoffish play and to promote interactivity. And I think generally if you have more interactive games, you're going to have faster games, you know?
Yeah.
Because more things are happening, more models are being taken out, more goals are being scored.
Yeah.
So it's a side effect, I think, but it's a happy side effect.
Yeah. So you said there that you actively saw something that was happening in like the meta and you went, right, we don't like that. So is there anything else you've sort of looked at when changing things like within guilds? Like obviously not, God, it's going to be difficult not naming specifics, but looking at things and going, people are playing with their toys wrong. That's not how we envisage this working. Or oh my God, can't even give an example. like, is there anything that you sort of went, you're playing with that toy wrong, so we're going to change it?
Not hugely. It's more the general playstyle that you started to see in the game rather than any individual guild. Actually, I guess one example I could give would be Corsair and how the Fish were playing in terms of Corsair teams very often just killed the ball and scrummed up and killed four people and then got a goal. And that's not how Fish are intended to play. Like, that's just not what they're supposed to do. But that is perhaps, on one level, is to use your term, someone, people playing with their toys wrong. But it's also something that we as developers have to look at and go, they have all the tools for this. Just because we didn't think people would play like this, that doesn't mean they can't. You know, if you're playing with your toys and winning games and whatever and having fun, then you're playing with your toys right. There's no real way to play with toys wrong unless you're really actively making the game unpleasant for your opponent.
Which would be the case of, like you said, when that completely passive, like, comeback, just stand still, don't do anything, wait for them to get bored and run forward and make a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the one thing that we were like, we really don't like this, we want to make this, we want to remove this from the game. But obviously I think we have to own up to our share of allowing Fish to play like that. Fish were always intended to be an aggressive goal-scoring team. And the way Corsair was working really wasn't...
Well, it was certainly aggressive, wasn't it?
That was the thing. Like, it often wasn't. It was very often just, I'm just going to walk up and then drag you in and just sit you in a scrum and just hit you. And it's not really proactive or...
Because he knocks down for fun, you can't even walk away,
Yeah, exactly. And it's not so much aggressive as kind of... Yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't really how we envisioned... It's not how we wanted people... We didn't want people, when they sat down opposite a Fish player, they shouldn't be going, I'm going to get in a scrum and get beat up here. They should be going, oh no, he's going to try and score 3 goals here. I'm gonna have to kill him first or get the goals back or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the only one that I would say... That's the only example I can really think of that in terms of guilds, we weren't happy with how... And that's why, obviously, Fish have lost their momentous damage. There's no momentous damage in Fish anymore. Because we wanted to kind of reduce the efficiency of that playstyle.
Every time I hear it, it hurts. Every time I hear it, you know? Oh, there's no momentous damage in Fish anymore. It's just, oh, God, it's just twists. That knife just twists a little bit further.
Oh, you've got so many more tools now, though. Oh, actually, you haven't seen all of the Fish yet, have you? We won't say anything more about them, but it's... I feel like Fish are still in a very good place and have a lot of tools and a lot of access to tools and abilities to make up for the loss of momentous damage, I think it's fair to say.
That's one thing we've said, because when we were playing, when guild rules started sort of being phased in, one thing that Ryan said to me a few times is that when I'm playing him, it feels like his guild rule is snared and that mine's too into melee. And it's like, it's interesting how each guild just sort of takes the game and just bends it slightly to the way they play.
Yeah, exactly. And that's partially why we didn't put guild rules in quotation marks for a lot of the existing Season 1 guilds, is because they feel like they already have a thing without needing a sort of separate rule on the card, you know? Fish being like, almost everyone has a 2-inch melee, Hunters having huge access to Snared, you know?
So what do you think your personal favourite change is across Season 4?
That's a really good question. And I definitely haven't thought about that. Honestly, and as much as I'm not a Mortician player and I hate playing against Morticians, I think the new Scalpel, I just think is incredible in terms of how Mortician-y she feels now.
Yeah.
And I think it's very hard to compete with that in terms of like how thematic and cool and good that model is now, and how much more she feels like a Mortician and how perfectly we represent that kind of Voodoo Strings aspect of her.
I must say, it's incredible. When that blog came out, she's just gone from feeling like a weird sort of single model control to now she just controls the entire board state. Her activation is like the threat of everything just going completely the wrong way if you're an opponent.
Absolutely. Like it's suddenly like you have a model that's been ganged up on by 2 enemy models, and by the end of her activation that model's 2 inches away, they're 2 inches back, and you've set up a scrum with one of their models, you know? She just manipulates the board state so well, and it's so good. She's so good.
One thing I wanted to ask is that, like, when listening to all the other content coming out, and it was on, was it Singled Out, I want to say, that you spoke about Masons?
It was Singled Out,
And you said that one thing that you've done is you've just removed Crazy from the game. The reason you gave for that, it was just amazing. And it just sounds like you guys seem to just completely wear your heart on your sleeve when developing this game. There's other, like, companies that, like, whenever you say anything, everyone just sort of closes ranks and there's no sort of suggestion of anything could ever be wrong, whereas like you guys always seem to put your hand up and go, yeah, we kind of balls that one a bit, you know, this is what we're doing to fix it. And is there any other changes throughout the sort of Season 4 that you've made, like, in along a similar vein of, you know, that's not what we want to be, that's not what we want to be doing?
No, I think the Crazy change is the big one for us that was, and it's really, really nice actually, because I've seen this on Twitter, but there's been a lot of people like saying, you know, really nice things about that on Twitter, but I keep getting tagged in it because I was the one that was talking about it. But it's worth mentioning here as well that like that was a joint decision, and I think the original idea might have been Perkins as well, just to be like, this isn't okay, let's just cut this out. So it's worth giving credit to everyone, you know, on the dev team and stuff like that. I don't think there's anything else. There's certainly some stuff and coming out in the future which is hopefully better with regards, no, that's really getting into stuff I can't talk about. I think the crazy change was the main one that I can think of going into season 4, and it's so nice to see people's reaction to it, because obviously like mental health is something that people are now being much more aware of, and it's really just nice to see people responding well to that, because yeah,
it's nice to be nice.
Yeah, and it's just nice, it's a little thing we can do that makes the world a slightly better place. And yeah, like we do at least I hope try and acknowledge when we make a mistake and just be like, yeah, we did this wrong, but we fixed it, so cool, you know.
Yeah, awesome.
Which yeah, it's something I'm very proud of us doing, and I really hope, and you know, I'm really glad that seems to be appreciated as well. It's one of the best things about our community, I think.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, nice one.
Sweet, yeah.
Well, I'll ask you one last question and then let you get on with your evening. So now we can't talk about the major guild, the minor guild, the union. So just, is there anything you can tell me about like the cooks? Come on.
They wear a lot of white, and the guild colour is red, and they hit people real good.
Oh, wow. Heard it here first, guys.
I can't remember, have we spoiled the names of them? Well, yeah, we have, because it was on the launch pack, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sugar and spice. The fact that we have like sugar and spice is just a great, like, you know, when you get the, you know, like we got the first version in from, I can't remember who wrote the first version of them actually, but we just saw the first version, it was like sugar and spice, and we were like, nice, good. Like, that's one of those days everyone's just kind of like, yeah, that's pretty good, that's excellent. And also the art brief for Wellington, and we're like, yep, we know who that's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's amazing, that was so good, and the fact that everyone got it straight away when it came up in Nationals, that's sick. Yeah,
that was very funny. Like, and it's just, that's honestly one of the most fun parts of this job, is getting to make those little references and stuff like that, and those little cultural references that everyone kind of gets, and it's really...
Fields of Wheat, really good. I must say, was my favourite thing.
That one I will take credit for, because that was me, and I don't know if I've ever been prouder in my entire life. Actually, no, I was prouder when we wrote Veteran Captain Salt, and that card is just a selection of Princess Bride and Aelstorm references.
What a combination.
Like, they're brilliant. But yeah, that was getting to write in terms of references and stuff, getting to write Veteran Salt was just one of the best things I've ever gotten to do.
Nice.
But yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Bryce. Yeah, especially when you're feeling ill, you know.
No, that's all right. No, I apologise, because I am, as I say, hopped up on cold medicine and about 19 cups of tea. So I apologise, because I feel like I was pretty rambly today. So, you know, I hope it was at least an interesting ramble, you know, like through a nice woodland. I don't know, like, maybe. We'll see what people say.
Yeah, short and sweet. That was...
Wow.
Bryce, what a patient man he is. I mean, my God, that was a...
We've just done the bookend. I haven't even heard it yet. I can't wait to tune. I'm going to be right there with you, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what you've just heard. I've been recording this. But when I'm listening to this in the future, I'm right there with you being picked off, I assume. This is the real episode of Stargate, where it goes back in time. But it's just after he finished the interview with Brian. It's just you coming out. It's just, every time we flash back, it's just you taking the headphones off going, oh, fuck.
Okay. Bryce, if you downloaded this out of interest, mate, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we do. I apologise on behalf of Alex. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're still with us, not just now, but into season 4, thank you for listening. And not just to this episode, but to every episode before.
We look forward to being with you throughout season 4, whether you look forward to it or not.
Yeah, we're going to inflict ourselves on the population regardless. But yeah, thank you for tuning in for all these episodes so far. I don't know about you guys, but me and Alex are looking forward to nothing but season 4 from now on.
Toodles.